Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. The kinds of plants we can grow in our region is changing. The USDA just updated its maps to reflect our warming climate, and it shows a major shift. Our gardening experts are here to discuss what warmer weather crops can now grow in our area and what new pest problems we could see. We'll discuss that, plus how to help the birds in your garden brace for the coming winter and some advice on growing pecan trees. It's a full hour of gardening today with your phone calls. Joining me now are Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery. Welcome back, Kamisha.
Great. Thank you.
Ohio State University Department of Entomology Assistant Professor and Ohio State Extension Educator for Hamilton County, Joe Boggs. Thanks for being here, Joe.
Oh, it's great being back on.
Madison Tree Care and Landscaping Vice President and CEO, John Butcher. Welcome back, John.
Hi, Lucy.
And Brick Gardens founder, Dominique Peebles. Thanks for being here, Dominique.
Hey, Lucy. Thanks for having me.
Do you have questions about your garden or landscape? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Joe, I want to start by talking about this new USDA map. Break down, in layman's terms, what's changed with the map? What's the big headline here?
Well, the biggest headline was the map was updated from 2012. So the last time we had a USDA plant hardiness zone map was dated to 2012. Now what these hardiness zones have to do with is the minimal temperatures that we may experience in the winter. And so, for example, in 2012, we had parts of Ohio that were in a zone that's called 5B. Now, the zones run from 1 to 13, with 1 being the coldest. You know, you're talking Arctic Circle 1, like minus 60 to minus 55.
Ooh.
So as you progress upwards towards 13, then the minimal winter temperatures that we can experience become warmer and warmer. So at 5B, we're still talking about, you know, minus 15 and minus 10. Well, with the update, the 5A has virtually disappeared. Now, there weren't many places, I want to emphasize that, but they've just disappeared. In 2012, the vast majority of Ohio was in what we call 6A. So 5B now up to 6A. 6A was minus 10 to minus 5. And that was the vast majority of Ohio, except for, like, say, down around Ironton. Well, if you look at the new map, what you'll see is a large portion of Ohio, including all of Southwest Ohio, all the way up to Columbus, mainly the southern part of the state, you might say, is now in an entirely different category. It's now in 6B, which means that our minimal, you know, winter temperatures are expected to be, you know, minus 5 to 0. That is a huge jump. And it even gets more dramatic as you go just not very far south. If you go down into Kentucky, you start actually picking up, you know, even warmer winter temperatures. So that, in a nutshell, is the headline, is that it very clearly shows this shift north in terms of winter temperatures.
So the winter temperatures, the lows that we used to think about as kind of more southern lows, are now moving north.
That's exactly right.
Kamisha and Dominique, I'll start with you, Kamisha. What have you seen as far as these temperatures and what it means for the fruits and vegetables you can plant in your gardens and that have been thriving here maybe in recent years that didn't do so well before?
Well, with the new hardiness map, it doesn't really make too much of a change in as far as food crops are concerned. Like Joe said, it's more of the winter crops. One of the things that I saw as far as changes is pests. You're seeing pests a lot earlier and later. I just went to the garden and saw an incredible infestation of aphids on kale.
That's not what you want to see.
Not at all.
Of us do.
Okay, bug lover.
No, I'm sorry.
I forgot, Joe. Yeah. but yeah, it was an incredible infestation. And one of the things that you have to think about with these temperature changes or you know, climate, is that now you'll have experiences where you're having generations of a particular pest in your garden in one season. So you have to think about that and not quit with just when you think it's not relevant to your crop anymore. It could still be there. Mm. So just laying eyes on your crop is important right now.
Yeah. Dominique, what, if anything, has changed for you in terms of the way you view what you can plant or what you shouldn't plant or when you should plant?
Yeah, like Kamisha said, it doesn't really change much where we're at as far as what you can grow. I mean, anyone that grows anything over the last 5 to 10 years can tell that that map was going to need to change because it's been getting warmer sooner and it's been staying warmer longer. So there's things that normally would start to die out by now. If you're just a hands-off gardener, there's things that would normally start to or already have died off now, where some of those things, when we get some of these warm days, you can start to see new growth coming up on them.
What are some examples of those kinds of things?
So, you know, typically we have cold frames a lot, so we're usually trying to extend our season anyway. But on some of the beds where we just left the greens or we left turnips and stuff like that, like you would pick them and think, okay, this is the last harvest I'm going to get, especially with those pick and come again type crops. But then you get a couple of warm days, you go back to the garden and you see the baby leaves on the kale or the baby leaves on the collards growing up, where, you know, again, you're not expecting to see that new growth when it starts to get this cold after you've picked it down to the bones, but then you can start to see it come back after some of these warm days. So, but again, to Kamisha's point, what also comes along with that is the pest again, because, you know, some of the beds that we have the cold frames on, we look in there, which obviously cold frames are going to help keep those pests alive, but it's happening on the beds that don't have cold frames, you know, so it's one of those things that you gotta really pay attention to.
Yeah. Kamisha, are there crops that maybe aren't as popular that can work here now that didn't work as well before?
I wouldn't say there's a specific crop that it would change with this new hardiness map. Like Dominique said, if you've been an experienced grower for, you know, a few years, you've already noticed what is going to thrive in this zone what you're going to have a successful crop with. I wouldn't say that there's something that's different. Not here in Ohio. I would say Hamilton County, because further north, it's a significant difference. You know, you can start to think about as far as like around the Great Lakes. It's now the same zone that we are in here down in Cincinnati. So you can start to think about extending your warm weather crops a little bit further. You can start to think about in Kentucky, areas of Kentucky where it's now, you know, the southern temperatures are sort of creeping up in that area, where you can start to also think about growing some more tropical, I would say, weather crops down there too.
John, what are the implications for our landscapes? We're going to be seeing a lot more magnolia trees this part of the country.
Well, I think that is a positive, is that there are a lot of borderline hardy plants that are going to perform a little more consistently here. They're still going to get zapped in cold spells over the winter. We have extremes like last winter, right before Christmas. But like crepe myrtles are a great one that are one of my favorites that are worth it, even if they get burnt back. But the warmer it gets, the more reliable those should be. But you're also going to have, with the landscape plants, more pest problems seems to be happening more readily. And I'm actually worried about, like, kudzu vine is that vine that takes over when you drive down into Tennessee, down 71. And they've always said that doesn't come up here because it's too warm. And if we keep creeping this way, that would be a really scary thing to have here.
Yeah. How do you expect that happening? I mean, is this just like a Spider-Man situation where the kudzu just like clings onto a car and just comes north?
I have to imagine there's a flower and a fruit at some point. And I'm guessing Joe may know for sure, but typically things that spread that rapidly usually have help from birds and critters.
Yeah, birds. Joe, is there a particular plant you're most excited about? John just mentioned crepe myrtle. That's kind of a favorite of yours, isn't it?
It really is. That's very interesting because I think we, you know, we go down south. I mean, you go into the Carolinas, for example, and point south. I mean, you just, these crepe myrtles are just eye poppers. You know, they just, and as John mentioned, you know, we've long grown crepe myrtles in greater Cincinnati, expecting every so often for the top to be gone. The root system would survive, but, you know, then they would regrow. We could conceivably get away with them growing a lot longer. But one thing that a climatologist friend of mine reminded me of is not to get too carried away on things, because these are based on averages. And of course, you know, average, you know, I hate to use this, but, you know, a statistician once said to me, and I always like this, that, you know, an average is kind of like if you had your head in the oven and your feet in an ice box, on average, you're going to feel comfortable. And so, you know, we will still see some extremes. As John mentioned, you know, last December, we had a crash dive in temperatures. Now, our changing pattern of weather meant that there were a lot of plants that weren't quite ready for that. So that's where we then saw quite a bit of damage. But we can still conceivably have those crash dives in temperatures, but on average, they just won't occur quite as often. So it's just, I'm just putting a cautionary note out there that we're still in a transition zone, as we've always been, transitioning between what we think of the upper Midwest and the South. But, you know, we're going to start seeing things that we didn't expect. And back to the pest situation, you know, more of the insects that require that will do well during the winter. In other words, quite a few insect pests that we deal with in the garden and landscaping, they can be killed by cold winter temperatures. So they'll move down, like, say, in the duff beneath a tree. However, you know, if the temperatures are warmer, that means that they are going to get away with surviving the winter more often. So, you know, things like, for example, some of the insects that we see on squash vine borer and squash bug, two of my favorites, right, Kamish? I mean, they're just
my favorite.
Oh, yeah, I know. They're terrible things. Both of those overwinter in a way that they could be subject, you know, to cold winter temperatures. But if we're having warmer winter temperatures, then we could possibly see them arriving much earlier and in higher numbers. So those are just some examples. But as I said, we sort of need, you know, some cautionary points here. It may not always, I'm not planting palms yet, for example.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about gardening for the full hour today. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Joe, you were just talking about some of your favorite insects and pests. At the risk of completely derailing our conversation, what, if any, implications does this have for our beloved cicadas?
Really nothing.
Okay, good.
Put it that way.
Good. I mean, they're down deep enough answer. That it's not gonna mess with them.
You're exactly right. I mean, what we may see, and what we'll probably no doubt see, of course, is more early arrivals. You know, as they get closer to the surface, you know, the spring temperatures can be, obviously the soil is going to be warmer. So we may see a more early arrival of them, but you're right. They are insulated in the soil. And we're not going to get so warm, and this is important. You know, as you might go further down south, we start falling out of some of the periodical 17-year and 13-year cicadas, and some of that is because it gets to be too warm. But we're not there yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Joe, what is the USDA saying about this as it pertains to climate change? What's the message?
Well, I think it's very much as I think it very much does reflect, you know, that we are experiencing climate change. I mean, it very much reflects that we have a warming climate. And so what the USDA is emphasizing with this, and of course some other reports, are that we are going to have to now start paying close attention to, you know, what these temperatures are going to do for field crops, for example. Now, you know, plant hardiness zone, we don't tend to think of that so much in terms of field crops that, you know, as we're talking about here on the radio, but it will make a difference in terms of how long things can go, when harvests can occur and those sorts of things. So, You know, what the USDA is saying with this is that, okay, this is more this is much more accurate. It is very much reflecting, you know, what we know is happening. But it also means that we really do need to pay attention, you know, to what's next.
I want to remind our listeners again, it's a full hour of gardening. We've got a panel of experts here to answer your questions. You can call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We do have a question from our colleague, Jennifer Merritt, who works with us here at WVXU. I'm going to direct this to you first, Dominique. She says, I have quite a few big round tomatoes on my tomato plant, but they're all still green. What went wrong? How can I get them to ripen faster so they're not lost to the squirrels and birds? She said, I forget the exact variety, but they look Roma-ish. Any thoughts, Dominique?
Yeah, if you have tomatoes still on the vine now, I'd say this is that time of the year where we just enjoy green tomatoes because it's going to take them. Imagine putting them in your windowsill, and sometimes you're like, it takes forever for this thing to ripen, but that's because it's going to take longer when we're at these temperatures. And the other thing you got to think about is if we get a really bad frost or something like that, you're going to end up messing the tomatoes up altogether. So at this point, I would just take them and start thinking about some dishes that you can use green tomatoes with.
Okay. John has some thoughts on this.
My grandparents used to harvest them green before the last freeze, and they'd wrap them in newspaper, and they'd put them down in the essentially a part of the basement that didn't get any light. And you have to check them pretty frequently because they'll rot, but they actually ripen naturally in the basement and are quite delicious still. I would recommend trying that.
Wow. Some grandparent wisdom from John. Thank you. Yep. Kamisha, do you have any advice for Jen about what she could do differently next year if she's not a huge fan of green tomatoes or she doesn't want to try the grandparent wisdom?
I would say going for a different variety, like a determinate variety, if she wants to have more red ripened tomatoes. But having a tomato plant and expecting it to have red plump tomatoes on it at this time of the year is a high expectation. I would get together some recipes. You know, there's all different types of recipes for green tomatoes, fried green tomatoes. You can make chow chow and all different things like that. But it is a high expectation to have in this area red tomatoes at this time of the season.
Yeah. Well, I can say with Jen, she has very high standards. So I'm not surprised that she has these high expectations.
You know, I have to comment. How many times have we expected to have fried green tomatoes in Cincinnati for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just, you know, kind of throwing that out there. Right. Again, you know, we need to be cautious about, is this going to be every year?
Right. Start a new tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Sharon, thanks so much for calling. What's your question?
I have two. First of all, I want to say I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much for doing this on gardening. I have two plants that I have immigrated from New Jersey, which has much more temperate climate. I don't know what zone it's in. One is a variegated akuba, which I think most people know as a houseplant. And the other is fig. I have fig plants. I typically write the variegated akuba is in the ground, but my fig plants are in pots, fig trees. So I wrap my variegated akuba in burlap every year. And typically it survives, but what I'm hearing, it didn't do very well last year because of the severe frost or weather in December. What do your experts recommend in terms of keeping them both alive? Hmm. And one more thing, my trees, which I guess the tallest one's probably 6 foot, I bring into the garage and they're quite happy in there, but they're starting to get large.
Yeah, you're going to need a taller garage, I guess, huh? Okay,
yes.
We'll see. John, do you have thoughts on that, what Sharon can do to protect those plants?
Well, the figs, there are cold, hardy figs or more hardy figs that work well here. There's a Chicago hardy. There's a couple other varieties that even in the coldest winters, they'll just die back to the root and then reproduce a lot like a crepe myrtle would do. If you wanted to minimize that, you could certainly put like a chicken wire cage around it and a loose like oak leaves kind of stuffed in there to insulate, or pine straw or something like that. And I'm not familiar with the other plant that she's using, but maybe something similar to that would work. I've never used it.
Hmm. Joe, do you have any familiarity with that other plant?
Yeah, sometimes we call it, Japanese laurel. That's what I keep hearing it called, but that's going to be pretty tough. I hate to say this. It may start, we see it doing very well, like you said, New Jersey, the Carolinas, Virginia, even my native West Virginia, the southern part of the state. Some folks have had those outside. In our area, it's still going to be a little bit iffy. I think the same thing that John recommended in terms of what you're already doing, but as just putting burlap around it, it may not be enough. What John was describing, I think, is something to consider as well, where you do actually put an insulator in there like leaves. It may be helpful, but it's still going to be a problem. And as you pointed out, that's one where some folks have been growing them outside and getting away with it. But those December temperatures really knocked it back. Some plants are totally lost.
Right, right. Okay, well, Sharon, is there something else you want to add, John?
Well, I just want to be really specific that all leaves don't do a good job at this. Like maple leaves, they pack together really tightly and get wet.
Yeah.
And they're not trapping any air, so they don't actually insulate well, where the oak leaves tend to stay a little bit more spread apart. And that's why, but just don't throw any leaves in there and expect good results.
Okay. Sharon, I sure hope that helps.
I didn't hear any of it, but...
Oh no. Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that. We must have had a technical problem, but you can hear our repeat at 8, or it'll be up posted up on our website in just a few hours.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I don't know what happened there, but we will continue with our gardening show in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our full hour of gardening and a panel of experts to answer your questions. My guests are Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, Ohio State University Department of Entomology Assistant Professor and Ohio State Extension Educator for Hamilton County, Joe Boggs, Madison Tree Care and Landscaping Vice President and CEO John Butcher, and Brick Gardens founder Dominique Peoples. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. We did get an email question that right before the break. Brian emails, how do these changes, I guess, in terms of the zones, affect the grass we grow? Would it be smart to switch to a warm weather grass? John, do you have thoughts on that?
I still don't think you want to switch to a warm season grass. Those tend to, at least the ones I'm familiar with, would be Zoysia and Bermuda, and those tend to just spread into the beds and get all over and take over lawns, and they're almost impossible to eradicate. I would say that the turf-type tall fescues are still probably the best grasses that we're using. There's some other blends with other grasses that are mixed in that are good, but I would avoid the warm season.
Okay. Is Zoysia, is that the type of grass that just gets real brown at some point of the year? It just looks like it's totally dead.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, some of our neighbors used to have that, and it looked real ugly for a while, and then looked pretty afterwards, I guess. Circle of life. I want to talk now about to what we can be doing in our gardens. The days are getting shorter. The temperatures are getting cooler. What should we be doing in our gardens, Kamisha? What are you harvesting and planting and preparing right now?
Well, I'm still harvesting our brassicas, lettuce, mustards are doing very well. Collards and kale are still doing very well. As you can see, we haven't had any very low temperatures. Some of those crops haven't even been covered. We did take some precautions on a few days to put some frost cover on those crops, but we're still harvesting from those. We've put down cover crop probably about a month ago. At the latest, we had started putting down cover crop on some of the beds. We've also started to try to add more nutrients to the soil other than cover crop, adding compost, adding leaves, things like that. So we're still, full speed ahead.
Yeah. What about you, Dominique? Anything special you're doing this time of year in your gardens?
Same thing. You know, it's been warm for a little bit longer. So, you know, if you want to extend your season and you want to get your cold frames ready, now's the time to start doing that. At least getting them prepared. Haven't really had to cover them much because, again, the temperatures. But same type of crops that we're growing still with the brassicas. And, you know, this is that time of year where it's easy for me to come home with my contribution to Thanksgiving dinner because I just have to pick the greens and the turnips and take them home, right? So that's my contribution for the holiday. But, yeah, it's that time of year to really start thinking about preparing your soil for next year, getting your composting systems in place, because again, as you're getting rid of all this summer type crops, you want to make sure that you have somewhere to compost that stuff so you can look to use that as soil sometime down the line next season. Yeah.
Dominique, did you plant anything or grow anything in your gardens this year with the Thanksgiving meal specifically in mind?
It's always the greens for me. Greens and turnips is what my dad always asked for, so I make sure that I have a couple garbage bags full of that just for that. But we also do lettuce because, again, we do both indoor and outdoor gardening. So in our hydroponic systems, we have various types of lettuces and herbs and things like that. So it's just pick a packet and drive it home.
Okay. Great. Well, we do have some callers on the line. Let's start with Mary. Hey, Mary, thanks for calling. What is your question?
Yes, I was wondering if it's too late in the season to trim off a limb from a rising sun redbud, and if it's too late to prune barberry bushes.
What say you, John?
Absolutely not too late. Should be dormant season for pruning is usually the best time for trees and shrubs in general, other than if you may be cutting off flower buds. But for sure, the barberries are, I mean, pretty much any time of the year you can get away with pruning those without consequence. And one limb off the red bud is the perfect time of year to do that, assuming you're making the proper cut.
Okay. Hope that helps, Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And we have John on the line. John, thanks so much for calling. What's your question?
We're previously on the edge of the range for rhododendron and mountain laurel. Is it now hopeless to try to grow that in Cincinnati?
Well, let's see what Joe thinks. Joe seems to find hope everywhere, but I don't know if he can find hope with this, Joe.
You don't know how much, again, being a native West Virginian, and rhododendron is a state flower. You don't know how much I would love to have rhododendrons here, but it's not the temperature that we need to worry about. It's the soil conditions. And I should have said this earlier, you know, that soil can trump all. It can be, you know, if we have our heavy clay soils, high soil pH, and that's the problem with rhododendrons, mountain laurel, azaleas, quite a number of plants that require more acid soils. So you can grow these here as long as you're using an acidifier, but it's not, you know, something in the soil to raise or to lower the pH. But it's not temperature that's going to be the limiting factor.
John, I saw you nodding your head in agreement.
Oh, absolutely. And even with amending the soil like crazy and having the acidifiers, you're still going to have quite a few, if not most, of the plants you use aren't going to last long term.
Sorry for the bad news, John.
Yeah, I wish I could have been more positive.
Oh, maybe I'll try to do this under pine trees.
Under pine trees?
No, it's still not going to. Here's the problem is that we're sitting on top of what we call calcite deposits. I mean, you can see this when you just go into some of our streams and we see all the limestone there. So it's just, you know, that calcite is calcium is going to constantly rise to the surface and the pH is going to constantly rise. So the acidification by pine needles is minimal compared to what's beneath our feet. I'm still negative, aren't I?
No
I
kidding.
Just realized, you know, no
being
positive
such a Debbie Downer today.
I tell you.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling, John. Sorry we didn't have a better answer for you, or a happier answer for you.
Yeah, happier.
Yes. Thank you. We have Pat on the line. Pat, thanks so much for listening and for calling. What's your question?
Well, I don't have a question. I have a comment.
Okay.
I'm going back to the green tomatoes. And I live in the Cincinnati area, and we picked our green tomatoes, and I had heard, and it worked, put them in a paper bag, brown paper bag, with a banana, and they ripen up beautifully.
What happened to the banana?
I don't know, there's something, yeah.
The bananas release, I think it's ethylene, Joe, is that right? It's some chemical for ripening vegetables quicker, and that's part of the reason a banana could speed that up. But you don't have to have the banana for that to work, but it may actually improve my process.
Wow.
I like John's process. I like that.
Yeah. Pat, that's great.
We had fresh tomatoes in our salad last night, and they were delicious.
Yeah. And what does the banana look like after all this?
I wouldn't eat it.
Not even good for banana bread after that?
Oh, it could be, but I just worry about that.
Okay. You don't want tomato banana bread. That'd be
correct.
Nasty. Okay. Okay. Well, thank you, Pat. That's a great tip. We appreciate it.
We do need to, right? I want to say it again. We need to recognize that she's called in with John's process. I like what you said.
Yes, he claims it. It was his grandparents, but John has claimed it. Yes, yes. Well, Caroline, you are on the air now. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question?
I want to say it again. We need to recognize.
Caroline, can you hear us? It sounds like you might be maybe had the radio on.
Yeah, I was hearing my voice.
That was
kind of scary, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. Can you hear us, Caroline?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I sure can. What's your question?
So I tuned in late, so I apologize if this was already covered, but the gardeners mentioned cover crops and cold frames, and I'm not sure what a cover crop is, and I have heard of cold frames, but if there could be some how-to instructions and details, I would very much appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you.
You're calling the right place. Kamisha, you want to start with that one?
Sure. Cover crop is basically nutrients that you're adding back into your soil from anything that you may have grown during the previous season in that same area. It can be a mixture of all different types of plants, such as hairy vetch, you know, all different types of other seeds. You can have a mixture. You can have a raised bed mixture. You can have a fall or summer, cover crop. It depends on what is missing out of your soil. What did you have in there previously? You can purchase cover crops online. There's also a supplier here locally that you can purchase cover crops from, but it's basically just seeds that are going to produce plants that are going to replenish your soil with the nutrients that it might be now deficient in because of your previous crop that was there prior.
Yeah. And Dominique, you want to answer the other part of her question?
Which was the cold frames?
So
we call them cold frames because we have garden beds, right? So these are frames that we, in the wintertime, put on top of the garden bed, and it has the plastic, like, low hoop covering over it. So if you imagine, like, a big hoop house with plastic on it and stuff like this, this is just a smaller version that we attach to our garden beds. So in those beds, we can either raise the frame up or lower it based on the temperature outside, but it allows us to extend the season. So if you want some how-to on how to do that, I mean, Google can definitely be your best friend. YouTube has a lot of great videos out that will show you how to build certain cold frames and things like that. So, you know, there's no shortage of ways to find out how to do these things. Same with cover crops. If you do soil testing, that'll let you know what your soil needs. And then you can kind of take that, go online and look at certain cover crops that grow good in Ohio, and then put those in your bed to help amend that soil.
There you go. Well, we will be back to wrap up today's gardening show in just a few moments. If you have questions for our experts, now is the time to call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're in the home stretch of today's gardening show. My guests are Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, Ohio State University Department of Entomology Assistant Professor and Ohio State Extension Educator for Hamilton County, Joe Boggs, Madison Tree Care and Landscaping Vice President and CEO John Butcher, and Brick Gardens founder Dominique Peebles. If you have questions for them, now's the time to call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Okay, we have, we're going to have to do lightning round because we've got people stacked up on the phone. We've got some emails. Fabian emailed a while ago. This is for you, Joe. Leaf litter to remove or to leaf, pun intended. What's the benefit for the critters if you leave the leaves there? Do moth and butterfly pupae live in the leaves? What's the benefit of these insects? Joe, what do you think?
Well, I think, yes, there are some that do, but the overall numbers are, I think, sometimes inflated. My personal feeling is it's best to leave them. It's also best to mulch them, like using a mulching mower. Leave the leaves there because you're actually doing what's done in the forest with nutrient recycling for the trees. When we haul off the leaves, we're hauling off the nutrients that those trees can use down the road. So minimal impact on Lepidoptera that do, you know, pupate under those conditions. They're just not quite the number that people believe to be there. But mulching is extremely important for nutrient recycling.
Super. We have some callers on the line. Hey, Greg, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi, I was calling. I had a couple questions about azaleas. I wanted to check. I don't know if it fell into the category that was mentioned before, because I was wanting to do some trimming on those right now and wanted to check if that was a good time. And I wanted to see if this went along with the other one about if I needed to add anything to the soil to help with the pH level. And then I was finally again about the azaleas. It's kind of, I have kind of a dusty, looks like film on the leaves, and I didn't know if there was anything I could do to fix that or if that's just natural.
Okay, what do you think, John?
First part of the question, I would not recommend pruning your azaleas now. Those are spring bloomers. The buds are set for spring. So whatever you prune around the edges, you're going to be cutting off those valuable flower buds. Second, I would always say to continue to amend your soil for reducing the pH is good for azaleas. Pine fines are a great solution for that. Really anything organic, pine straw works as well, but I really like pine fines. It's a really finely ground pine bark that does a great job for that. And the last thing, I can't be 100% certain based on your description, but I would bet you have azalea lace bug. And if you turn your leaf upside down, if you see little brown splotches on it, that'll be the giveaway that it's actually lace bug. And there's probably some organic ways to deal with that, but it's really hard to treat because they're on the bottom of the leaf. So sometimes using some of the systemic insecticides to control those are a little more of a reliable way to do it.
So when should you prune azaleas if now's not the time?
I would say within a month after they bloom, like right after they bloom to even a month or two is okay. But once they set the buds for next spring, you don't want to prune them again.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. I hope that helps.
Just comment very quickly, John. Also, you know, they might want to think about powdery mildew on azaleas. That's also pretty common in our area. I like the lace bug. I'm glad you went with an insect, but just kind of powdery mildew is also something we see quite often in our region.
And you can tell the difference of powdery mildew. You can almost kind of wipe off a little bit. It's a fungus, where the lace bug, you'll see the brown splotches on the bottom.
Hope that helps, Greg. Thanks for calling. We have more callers waiting. Hey, Carla, thanks for calling. What's your question?
I'd like to know how I can get rid of mint that has completely overtaken about 9 raised beds behind my garage. It's in a full sun location in Indianapolis, Indiana. Mm. I tried using tarps for months at a time to try and keep any sun from getting into it. But when I lifted the tarps, it was still just matted with white roots.
Do you have thoughts on that?
Sounds like you're going to have to do some digging.
Because
my thought was going to be, I mean, that mint stuff is nuts how invasive it can get to your other beds. But I mean, your hand pulling was my first thought. Then my second thought was using cardboard and covering it to kill it. But if you've already covered it and it's not working, digging the roots out. Mm. I mean, and I don't want to suggest any, you know, herbicides or anything like that. So I would say hand digging and getting that stuff out, getting the roots out so that it doesn't spread so much.
Yeah. Anything you want to add, Kamisha?
That's really the root of the problem.
Nice.
Oh, no.
Getting those roots out. It's going to be difficult. If you already tried the burlap, try the cardboard or black plastic. But, you know, like you said, once you lift that up, it is a chance that it's still going to, you know, be able to thrive once it gets exposed to the elements. I would say trying to dig it up. If it's a raised bed, I think that's something that, you know, you can try to do easily, you know, getting it out of that bed and just replacing that soil.
Hope that helps, Carla. We have more callers on the line. Hey, Sandy, thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Well, this is actually just a comment about Joe Boggs. I took an entomology class from him more years than I care to admit ago. And over the years, I've emailed him questions, and he's always been really good about getting back with the answers. I've listened to him on your show. The man is a gem. That's all I got to say.
Oh, geez.
The man is a gem. Thank you for your time, sir.
We agree. Oh, and Sandy, I bet Joe's going to tell you the check's in the mail.
I was just going to say, how much is that worth?
His knowledge has been worth a lot to me. So, yeah, here comes a check.
Aw. Well, thanks, Sandy. That was so nice of you to call. Yeah. We appreciate it.
I should say thanks, Aunt Sandy.
There you go. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, sis. Huh.
Yeah, well, great. My sister called.
Yeah. We have another caller on the line with more about azaleas. Hey, Tim, what's your question?
Hi. Our azalea is just having a wonderful time taking over the front sidewalk on the north of our house. And wow. My question is, should I want to aggressively prune it. Should I go to the interior and start with the larger branches, or should I just start working to bring it back from the buds in?
What do you think, John?
I mean, I would say from the outside in the case of an azalea, but I would be cautious because a lot of times azaleas just don't do that well here. And the fact that you have one doing well, I'm wondering if there's an opportunity to transplant this at some point, maybe in like early March, and to move it a little further away from the sidewalk, and then you don't have to cut those flower buds off, and you can hang on to it without having to mess up the beauty of it too much.
Mm. He's really advocating for your azaleas, Tim.
Like I say, while I can appreciate the opportunity to do potentially a transplant, first of all, this established plant has been growing over the sidewalk for some time. It's just been superficially trimmed. And I want to get a little more aggressive about it because it's eating up half the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Well, good luck. I hope that helps, and I hope that azalea gets back into line where it should be. We have Chris on the line. Hey, Chris, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hey, yeah. I have a bed of snow goose flowers that I am trying to get rid of, and what I've done is basically take my mower and cut them all down to the ground and then use what nobody would probably appreciate, Roundup on them. And then I've covered them with a mulch that I make out of my oak leaves in my yard. And I'm wondering if that's going to do it.
Okay. What do you think, John? Do you have thoughts on that?
I'm not sure what snow goose flower is. I was actually looking it up.
Joe, are you familiar with snow goose flowers?
Well, the only thing that, yeah, I mean, but I think of it as a prunus, John. I mean, a type of cherry.
Yeah, that's a tree, right? A cultivar.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't. Can you describe it a little better? Is he still?
So, yeah. The reason it's that it's been told to me that it's snow goose, and I've looked it up, is that it has a flower on the top of it. It's sort of shaped like a gooseneck, and it turns all white. And there's hundreds of them, and they're pretty invasive.
I am flummoxed.
Pollinator-friendly garden.
Wow, you have stumped our experts.
If you send us a picture, I don't know if
If you want to send a picture to talk@wvxu.org, we will get it to our experts and get your answer after the show.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank
you. Thanks, Chris. We're going to try to get a few more callers. Hey, Bill, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Yeah. I have a problem with little tiny insects in my coal crops in the fall. It looks like a whitish powder, but you look close and it's little tiny little bugs, and it affects the kale and the broccoli not until September. The only thing I found that works is malathion, but I don't know what the bugs are, and I don't know if I have any other choices.
Do you have thoughts, Kamisha?
Yeah, definitely. It could be aphids.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, especially on your coal crops right now. I just was at the garden and saw a very bad infestation of aphids. If it's a horrible infestation, I would say removing that particular crop and not putting it in your compost or anything like that. But if it's not that bad, you can remove some of the leaves that you might see some of the aphids on. You can use like a neem oil to try to spray on it. Just make sure that you're watching the weather and when you're going to apply, try to apply it earlier in the day. But those are some things. That's what I think this particular pest might be. What about you, Dominique?
That's exactly what I think it is. And it's the same thing. Use neem oil. Pay attention. You don't want to use them in the warmest part of the day and stuff like that. But also, if it's not a big infestation and you're just seeing it on a few of the leaves, remove the leaves. You know, and that's really all you can do at this point. And then next year, think about maybe rotating where you're growing those crops at so that you don't just, you know, give them life to come back for another season.
Yeah.
But the aphids are not anybody's favorite, but, you know, you really just got to pay attention and just maintenance the plant.
Yeah, except for maybe Joe's. Well, thanks, Bill. We appreciate that. We're going to try to get one more caller. Susan, we're running out of time. What's your question very quickly?
I have a couple of orange pots and I want to plant them, but I know they have a symbiotic relationship with a fungus, and I'm curious how to plant them without losing that or what might be in the soil.
Oh, is that, and that's their Douglas firs you're talking about? Do you have any quick advice?
Yeah, Stegosa mentoni.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what to tell her in this case.
I'm sorry. Why don't you try to email us also, and we'll try to take care of you after the show. talk@wvxu.org. I've been talking with Civic Garden Center Urban Agriculture Coordinator Kamisha Montgomery, Ohio State University Department of Entomology Assistant Professor and Ohio State Extension Educator for Hamilton County, Joe Boggs, Madison Tree Care and Landscaping Vice President and CEO John Butcher, and Brick Gardens Founder Dominique Peebles. Thank you all so much for your time today. This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.